Hello, welcome to the In Conversation podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Max Davey, consultant paediatrician at Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. Max is a member of ACAM's Neurodevelopmental Special Interest Group. Welcome, Max. Can you start by introducing yourself with a few details about your role?
So I'm Max Davey. I have a few roles. I'll quickly whiz through them. My day job is as a developmental paediatrician, essentially. I run an over fives developmental assessment service, and it's explicitly not condition specific in Lambeth, where we are now. I am also health improvement officer for the Royal College of Paediatrics, and I co-chair the special interest group at ACAM for neurodevelopmental disorders.
Okay, thank you. And what prompted your interest in neurodevelopmental disorders?
I think as I was doing my paediatric training, it struck me that it was an opportunity to really get to know people. When you're doing when you're assessing their neurodevelopment, you really get to know them. You get a bit more time with them, and you get to know them as people rather than as subjects or as vessels for a pathology of some kind. So I found that initially fascinating. I was, to start with, very, very much more interested in autism, but actually as time's gone on, I've become more broad. Perhaps I do more ADHD work now, partly because other people don't, but I'm at the point now when it's the whole of neurodevelopment that really interests me.
I want to ask you a sort of back to basics question, but neurodevelopmental disorders encompasses a range of disorders, so ADHD, as you've mentioned, autism spectrum disorder, developmental coordination disorder, and so on. What other disorders come under that umbrella?
Well, one really important one that we have explicitly included is learning disability, or now intellectual disability. So really, if you look at the developmental disorders, it's really just different patterns of strengths and difficulties within the child's profile, and their brain profile, essentially. The other one that really leaps out at me, and my speech and language colleagues would want me to mention, is developmental language disorder, which is what used to be called specific language impairment. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that everyone's starting to talk quite similar language. So in developmental coordination, in ADHD, everyone's talking about spectrums. They're all talking about how all of these conditions are interrelated. And I'm having the same conversations in lots of different groups. And the idea of our group is to bring those groups together in a way.
Is there increased prevalence for some of these conditions in particular?
My feeling is that there is not increased prevalence in the population. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that there has been a period of increased recognition, and that process is at a different stage with the different conditions. So I think with autistic spectrum disorder, I think we've been through a period of rapid growth and we're now slowing a bit. I would argue sometimes we are verging on the overdiagnosis at times with autistic spectrum disorder. With ADHD, we've had the surge of diagnosis, but we're still not quite, I think we're still a little bit underdiagnosing ADHD, and most people would accept that. But with something like developmental coordination disorder, I think we're massively underdiagnosing it, and we're not even at the point of that recognition and surge in diagnosis. And there may be sort of professional reasons and resource reasons for that.
The public have all kinds of misunderstandings about neurodevelopmental disorders.
Mm.
What types of prejudices and misunderstandings are common?
There are so many. You could almost write a list of the top 10 for each different neurodevelopmental condition. But I think the first one I would jump to with autism is a fear of autism, that the fear of a diagnosis of autism. And this is particularly prevalent in some of the families we work with who are not from the UK, who perhaps have different beliefs about neurodisability and neurodevelopment, that having something like this is a curse in some way. Mm. So that's a big problem. I think in ADHD, the biggest one I would want to get rid of is that it's just bad parenting. And we still see that objectively incorrect belief about ADHD, that it is just a function of parenting, which is absolutely scientifically disproved. I'm sure if you had an OT here, my colleague from OT would come up with similar list for developmental coordination disorder. But I think overall, one of the biggest misunderstandings is that these things are monolithic, in that, you know, everyone with a condition, it's like having a pneumonia. Everyone with a pneumonia has a particular pathology, and they react consistently to a particular kind of management. That is not what we're talking about here. These are just descriptors of patterns of development. And I think the misunderstanding that they are in some way monolithic conditions is one that spans all of them. And I think we should really move away from, if we can.
Does that apply to professionals too? Are they also sometimes guilty of getting it wrong?
I think so. I think that's absolutely right. I think professionals can fall into a number of traps. And I think actually sometimes I find the bickering between professionals about neurodevelopmental disorders utterly unhelpful. So on the one hand, you have the kind of people who critique the whole idea of neurodevelopmental disorders and say, this is kind of social control and there's massive overdiagnosis and we're just trying to medicate everyone, which in the UK is absolutely, which I think is not the case. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible to over-medicate, of course, and the US is a good example where in ADHD, they probably, well, I almost certainly are over-medicating and medicalizing behavior. So, but the problem is that I think that's incorrect. Some of the medical reaction to that has been to sort of be a bit defensive and say, no, look at all these brain scans. This is a proper condition like Parkinson's disease and like epilepsy. It's exactly the same. And it's not, it is a descriptor of behavior. These are all spectrum conditions. There are gray areas and we've got to respect the gray areas and also respect the impact the environment can have on these children while keeping hold of our paradigm of diagnosis. We need to be flexible about how people understand it.
Mm-hmm. Neurodevelopmental disorders are a neglected area of mental health practice, and there's been relatively little mention of them in recent government documents. Why do you think that's the case?
I think there's a specific reason why they're not in the policy documents as much. This area is not seen in many parts of mental health policy as part of the mental health brief.
Right.
So very often, so for instance, in NHS England, they've got a mental health team and they've got a separate ASD and learning disability team. So there's been a lot of work on ASD and learning disability, but the rest of the neurodevelopmental conditions just don't have a home in government. And that's one reason, I think, why they're not being prioritised. But I think the other reason is they fall between services. So in commissioning, they're often something that CAMS see as a paediatric priority and paediatrics will see as a CAMS priority. Mm-hmm. And either families will fall between services or, I think even worse, they'll get ping-ponged in between services in a way that's extremely unhelpful.
So how do you ensure more joined-up working?
Well, in fairness to government departments, they're starting to acknowledge this is a problem. And we are, as a special interest group, myself and Mark Lovell and Mary Busk, are very kind of active in those circles. And I met someone from the Department of Health who has a brief for neurodiverse conditions, which is fantastic. I only this week met this person. So I want to kind of cultivate her and get her brief going. So that's one thing that I think we can do. And I think it's the other thing is just to remind people who are pressing for attention for one condition to remind them that there is a cost to that, that other things get ignored. And I think we're all very good at pushing for our pet group of patients, but actually there's always an opportunity cost there. And I think I'm not saying we shouldn't push for particular groups, but the bigger the group we can push for, the more benefit overall.
There's been a lot of research in neurodevelopmental disorders in recent years. Is there anything you can highlight that particularly interests you or something in the pipeline that you feel will have a real impact?
So I'm not a researcher. I'm not really an academic. I think a lot of the research is interesting, but it's actually quite unusual that a piece of research says, okay, I need to do something differently now. I think the general tenor of research, which has interested me most, which is a theme rather than a particular bit of research, is how it's all flowing together. that you're finding speech and language difficulties in ADHD. You're finding, so people are exploring the commonalities genetically between ASD and ADHD, how everything is flowing in this in the direction of everything being related and interconnected. In terms of things down the line, what I'm interested in and would really like is more research on service design, on how what service designs work, and what is effective, not just in a clinic, but in local areas in general. I'm not seeing that, so I'm slightly changing the question, but I really want to see that kind of research because that's what really matters to families, in my view. I think it's very difficult to put some of these papers into practice. Mm. I think it's a frustration, as I would regard myself as a very ordinary community paediatrician. I don't have a multidisciplinary team. I work essentially alone in my clinic. And so it is frustrating to have these studies which are done by tertiary centres with a lot of resources. It's quite challenging to put that into practice.
The services, I assume, are often fragmented from what you're saying. Perhaps the training is also not well integrated. Is that a resource issue? Why is that?
I'm not sure it's a resource issue. I mean, there are resource issues, that's undoubtedly true, but the solution to fragmentation is not necessarily more resources, because that will just build the separate towers higher. I think the answer to... there's several answers to better integration. One of the things I'm very passionate about is that there is a local offer. This is now part of the Special Educational Needs and Disabilities legislation, but it should be extended to mental health more generally. I think if you join in with a local offer, that gives everyone a kind of overall structure to say, well, what's my job? What's your job? And actually the whole thing is focused on, what is our offer to parents? If you have a child with ADHD, if you have a child with DCD, what is the offer that we collectively have for you? Mm-hmm. And then it becomes very obvious if there's massive gaps and fragmentation. In terms of training, I have to say, I think a lot of it is to do with individual professions wanting to keep their specialness. Mm-hmm. I think we've been guilty of it in paediatrics. I think psychiatry and psychology have both been collectively and guilty of it between each other as well. I think there needs to be an awful lot more joint training. I would personally, although this isn't a Royal College of Paediatrics position, I would personally be very happy with greater integration of the paediatric and psychiatry curriculum and training. And there are conversations going on about that. But conversations is one thing. We need to make that the default if it's actually going to happen.
So given the lack of integration, what is the impact on children and young people themselves? Are they getting misdiagnosed? Are they falling between the gaps?
I think what's really interesting is that the same person can go to different professionals and get very, very different diagnoses. And I think that's one reason why when you see a young person, a child and a young person, you're assessing them, the first thing is to be descriptive, to step back and say, okay, what? Look across the board. That's why I'm absolutely determined that my clinic is not condition specific. It's an overarching look at the child's development overall. And that's got to be the first step. Then you can get rid of a lot of this bias. But yes, you're right. The same child can go to an occupational therapist and get developmental coordination disorder, go to a paediatrician and get autism, go to an educational psychologist and get an attachment disorder. That's right. Another, you know. Mm-hmm. So that can get very confusing. So I think we are, obviously, in medicine, it's not an exact science. It isn't. We're going to underdiagnose. We're going to overdiagnose. That is a given. We've got to just manage the levels of that and look at each other's practice to say, oh, hang on. So you offer that, and your population are all getting that diagnosis and that help. Well, why? Maybe some of my patients have got similar difficulties. So you know, what are the coordination needs of children with ADHD going to CAM service? Is that being looked at? Just as one example.
And is that sharing happening?
I think it's happening more. I think you've got to be fair to people. Frontline people are very busy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's really challenging is being able to rapidly assess an area of development in a way that leads to actual action. And that's something that I work on a lot in our clinic. I think there's some really good conversations happening between the different specialties and the different professions, and that's what partly our ACAM special interest group is all about, is sharing those conversations, having an OT, sharing a resource on sensory processing difficulties that's then picked up by a psychiatrist and goes, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I should think about that more. Or a paediatrician learning more about attachment and incorporating that into their assessment of children who are struggling socially. So it's that sort of thing.
Hmm. What would you like to see done at both a local and national level to better serve families affected by neurodevelopmental disorders?
I'm really encouraged by the idea that government departments might be starting to see these conditions as a whole rather than piecemeal. I think at a national level there needs to be more support for this idea of local offers, for local joined up commissioning, and for real, because ultimately change comes because of accountability. And we need to have mechanisms by which we are accountable to the families who live where we work. Mm-hmm. And that's not in place at the moment. They are lost and they don't even feel that they're in the conversation very often. And getting, actually one of the things that I think has been positive locally is getting our ADHD parents, although again, that's a single group and we're guilty of that. They're much more vocal now. They've made changes. They've set up their own charity and kind of full disclosure, I'm the chairman of trustees. that sort of empowerment has been really amazing. So we need much, much more of that. So parents' views can be heard both at a national and local level.
And presumably that depends on what diagnosis was made for their child, because you might have a very different pathway if you're...
Absolutely, absolutely right. And so it's difficult, isn't it? You almost want a kind of neurodevelopmental overarching group. But then again, all local authorities should have their own parent group for special mm-hmm. educational needs, and they're now inspected on how well these groups are integrated into special educational needs policy. So actually, if we're looking from a health perspective at these problems, that's a real opportunity to say, okay, well, don't necessarily set up your own group always. Maybe just talk to your local, we would call it the parent forum. Mm-hmm. They will have all of the answers that you need for what's going on out in the community.
Tell me a bit about the special interest group for colleagues working with children and young people with neurodevelopmental disorders.
So we got together. It was something that I proposed, and I'm co-chairing it with Mark Lovell, who's obviously a very prominent member of the ACAM team and an extremely kind of energetic and full of ideas guy to work with, which is fantastic. But we've recruited deliberately from all over the place. So we've got OT representation, speech and language, psychology, and we've got the charitable sector, which has been really exciting. We've got Autistica, again, a charity which is a single condition charity, but have a real broad view. Mm-hmm. And we've recently got a parent representative. So what we're looking at is three main themes that we think are important. One is education, and we're going to be running educational events regularly, which are for all professionals working with these young people, children and young people, and they're going to be deliberately inclusive and wide-ranging so that we can really get these different perspectives on board. And we're going to have debates, and we're going to have controversy, and we've already had it within the group. We've had these very, very good debates about diagnosis and about the different place of diagnosis and special needs. The second is policy. So we're pushing various buttons and we're checking with each other on how it's all going, trying to steer policy in a more inclusive neurodevelopmental way. And the third is research. Now, research is a difficult area, but we're essentially a clearinghouse for ideas. If somebody wants a collaborator in a particular discipline, mm-hmm. then this might be a place for them to kind of connect with someone who if you need an OT to sort of talk through your ideas with. Well, we've got OTs in our group, so it's just a way of connecting, really.
And are there set aims and goals, or is it more of an open forum?
I think we have objectives, which are the sorts of things that I have laid out. We certainly want to be able to run regular regular meetings. In terms of the policy aims, it's very difficult to measure when you've been successful. I think you just have to look back and say, okay, well, this seems to be getting better. We had that meeting and that seems to have led to it. We have to be a little bit self-critical, and if something's not working, we need to change it. But I think our members, I think one of the reasons why we want more broader membership of the special interest group is we want to be held account by our members. We want members to hold us to account.
Right. And who can join the group? How does one get involved?
So obviously the special interest group is open to everyone. It's very simple. There's going to be a link on the site, and I presume this will be linked to this podcast. And you just go there and follow the instructions. It's a very simple, few-step process to get joined into our website, which is a Basecamp website, which is a sort of project management website where we've got lots of documents. There's discussion. There's discussion threads, and there's a little place called a campfire where you can just go, "Hi everyone, how's everyone?" So there's all sorts of different potential options for sharing and discussion within that, and it obviously is going to be completely free for AICAM members to be part of our group.
Is there anything you would like to add, Max, that I haven't already asked you, perhaps as a takeaway message for people listening to this podcast?
I think we've got to always bear in mind that neurodevelopmental disorders are absolutely intertwined, and that any attempt to split services or conditions off or treat one as separate from the others is going to cause difficulties, and that we need to continue, even if it's hard, to drive integration and joint working across these conditions, because otherwise we're not going to get anywhere.
Can I check, is that something that ever happens within the special interest group? How do you ensure there's not a hierarchy for certain conditions?
That's a really interesting question. I think we've balanced it a little bit with the different interests. So we have Autistica, who have obviously an interest in autism, but we also chose them as a partner because they are very interested in the comorbidities and the rest of the neurodevelopmental, and we've had really positive conversations with them. I'm perhaps more on the ADHD side of things. It's a big interest of mine. Mark is a learning disability specialist, and of course we have the OTs coming in who have a big interest in DCD. Mm-hmm. So it isn't about having a perfect, you know, kind of a group of people who are so wise and so kind of have attained the nirvana of being totally objective. But it's balance. It's having lots of different perspectives. We do currently lack an educational perspective. And so if there's any educational professionals who want to join, you may be immediately poached and asked to join the committee, because we do lack an educational perspective at this point.
Dr. Max Daly, thank you ever so much. For more information on AICAM's Neurodevelopmental Special Interest Group, visit the AICAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter @ACAM. AICAM is spelled ACAMH. And you can also follow Max at Max Davie. That's @MaxDavie.